Welcome to the Death Doula Duo. I'm Jennifer O'Neill.
And I'm Sarah Kovash.
And this is where we explore the profound mysteries of life and all things death. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. Welcome to the Death Doula Duo. On today's episode, we are interviewing Hospice Volunteer Coordinator Charlene Kilgore. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's nice being here.
So I'll start by saying I met Charlene right after my death doula training with the NELDA back in 2019. I thought that, you know, volunteering was going to be a great way for me to gain some experience with that training and, you know, sitting with the dying. I also thought having you on would be a great way to use this as a call to action to encourage others to come around and do some of that volunteering.
Oh, yes. That's a good idea. Yes.
Yeah. And I'm excited to talk about this. Being a hospice volunteer has so many benefits, and I'm looking forward to hearing about those. Everything from your own personal growth to the impact you can have on families, as well as just overall community support.
Yes. Hospice volunteering, I know a lot of people think that it's like, oh my goodness, I can't do it. But, you know, it's just people, you know, it's your neighbors, it's your friends, your relatives, your church members, you know, hospice patients are just people. You could be one of them one of these days. And how would you want to be treated, you know? And I try to educate people on what hospice is really about. And it's really about just caring about people, you know. And I don't look at them as dying people. I look at them as living until the day they die, because to me, they still have value as long as they breathe. You know, I know some people look at people that sleep a lot and think, oh, they don't know anything that's going on, but they can still hear you if you talk to them, you know. And so, it's very, very important to have people care about you, you know, especially at the end of your life. You need to know that your life was valued and that people appreciate you for who you are.
That's a wonderful perspective, and that makes it really relatable to be able to provide that service.
Yeah, I like how you point out that, you know, it could be your neighbor, it could be anybody, you know, and that you most likely will end up there. Most people will end up in that position at some point.
It is. Uh-huh.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
It's just a little icebreaker. I know you've done some work yourself, and that's how you ended up being a volunteer coordinator. But what was the strangest last meal request that you've had?
The strangest last meal request?
Or even just last request, period.
Last request. Goodness. I don't remember. I remember some things that people did. Like, we had one man that used to go to the casino every week until about the third week before he passed away, you know. And so we encourage people to do all that they can do as long as they can do it. Hospice is different than home health. With home health, you have to be homebound. With hospice, you know, if you want to travel to another state and visit family, you can, you know. And so we encourage everybody to do as much as they can. We've taken people fishing one last time. One time we took a lady shopping, and she went and had her nails done, and they went, took her to the store, and she bought a T-shirt and some nail polish. And
I love that.
Yeah, and sometimes we do, like, last wishes, you know, for people. Sometimes people have wanted family portraits, you know, their last family portrait before the patient got so ill that they couldn't be able to, you know, go have it done. And so we've had a lot of requests, you know, for things that, and sometimes one lady just wanted to go home and sit in her rocking chair at her house for a while, for a few hours. Yeah. And so one hospice that I worked for actually would hire a limousine and pick the people up at their, most of them were in facilities, and take them out in that. And they drove her home, you know, and let her sit in her rocking chair at her house for a few hours.
That is amazing. I really like those stories.
Did you end up taking somebody to the casino? Is that what you were going to say?
No, I didn't take him to the casino, but I guess he had a way to go, you know, but we put our stamp of approval on it. You know, it's fine if that's what you want to do.
You know, I didn't know that. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, I had no idea.
Because home health
only
is
makes
really,
sense though.
Yeah. Home health is really restrictive in the fact fact that you can only like go to the doctor or, you know, I don't know if you maybe you can go to church or something like that, but you can't really get out because you're supposed to be homebound. And that's why they're coming to your house. But that's not the case with hospice.
That makes so much sense. I had no idea.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, Charlene, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm married and I have 3 kids and I have 5 grandkids. It's the star of my eyes, you know. And I've worked for hospice for almost 18 years now. Wow. And I kind of got into it just by chance. One, I had a work injury and I wasn't able to like sit at a desk and do computer all the time. And so I kept looking for a job that I could do that I wouldn't have to sit at a computer all the time. And my husband had gone to work for hospice before I did as a hospice chaplain. And I guess one day, for some reason, they asked him if I would be interested in a job. But the best thing was that he had been a full-time pastor for about 25 years. So I had done a lot of this kind of thing, just volunteer, you know, trying to get people to do this or do that or, you know. And so I just kind of fell into it. And I used the same principles to get volunteers in the church as I did getting volunteers for hospice.
Like, what was that? What was...
Well, you know, just looking at what people were capable of doing, you know, and looking for their talents that they had and what they were good at. And that's what I do when I get a new volunteer. I try to get to know them, see if they have any talents, any things, hobbies that they can do, you know, whether they... I had one lady that was an artist and she would take our patients' photos and paint photo and paint a portrait for them. And yeah, it was amazing. They absolutely loved it, you know. And some people take our photographers, and we've had them to take, you know, we'd go and do like makeup and stuff on them and take their pictures, you know.
That reminds me, one of the patients that I sat with for you, actually, I painted her fingernails.
You painted her fingernails, yeah. And, you know, this small things like that is just so meaningful to them because it makes them feel like they're still a person, you know, that they're still, that they still have value, you know. And because when you get ill, you know, a lot of times you start, sometimes you start falling into a depression, you know. Sure. And so I'm always looking for ideas to help lift them up and help them to have a good day. You know, that's my goal, is to anything that I can do to lift them up, you know.
Well, and even catering to their own interests, like you were saying with the last wishes. I mean, I'm sure you do that all along the way.
Exactly. You know, if there's something that, you know, we also do a program that we call We Honor Veterans, where we honor our veterans that are on hospice, and we go and do a small ceremony. And I sing, so like I do the Star Spangled Banner, you know, we do, I'd have a flag and we do the Pledge of Allegiance, you know. And these men, when you go do that, they just sit up and they become a different person all of a sudden. And it's almost like they're transported back in time until they were in the military and, you know, they will almost be, you know, at attention, you know. And it only lasts just a few minutes, and their family, we invite families, if they have families, that could come and participate. And we give them an opportunity to speak about their service if they want to. What my most memorable one was when I got there, this guy was asleep and he didn't wake up the whole time. And so I talked to him just like he was awake and told him exactly, I'm going to pin you now. I'm going to sing to you now. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And his family said, oh, I so wish he could have been awake to hear this. And that night, about 6 o'clock, he woke up. He wanted to know who I was. And he told them exactly everything that I did.
Wow.
And he
awesome.
Died the next night.
Oh,
and so it was like, story. It was the most memorable one I think I ever, I mean, they're all memorable because they're just so special. But, you know, knowing that he could hear me, even though he didn't move a muscle, he didn't blink an eye or anything during this whole time. But it shows you that even though they're not communicating to you, they still hear and you can still talk to them.
Yeah, that's always a great reminder. That really is.
Yeah, I've always heard that hearing is the last thing,
to go.
And then with all of the experiences that you get to have with them, with the hospice volunteers that you have, is there training that you do for them or things?
Yes, we have training for them. I teach them a lot by my experiences, you know, because I have experiences with a lot of people and a lot of different scenarios, you know. And then we have a manual for them to read, and then we have in-services for them to complete, you know. And it's just all educating them on what to do. And then some of it you just learn as you go, because you'll have questions, you know, after you start visiting, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? Why do they do that? Why do they do this? You know, and so then I'm able to, I go with them the first time that they visit or even the second time if they need it, just to get them going. Some people aren't accustomed to going to nursing homes. A lot of our patients are in nursing homes. You know, sometimes we'll have home patients that want volunteers, but sometimes they already have so many people coming into their house, they don't want more people. So I focus a lot on nursing homes, sending volunteers to nursing homes. And so I will go with them and start the conversation, you know, so they can kind of see how to talk to people. And
you provide a lot of support. That's right. Awesome. Mm-hmm.
I do remember one of the questions that I had as a volunteer, as a new volunteer, was whether I could bring one of my patients a soda.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if they're capable of eating and we can tell you, you know, or whether they're on a restricted diet, you know, we like for you to take things as long as they're able to do, you know, they can are able to eat them and, you know, bring craft project, you know, just whatever. I had one volunteer one time that was going to buy a dog. And so she had bought a dog breed book and took it. And this lady was one of the most difficult people. She had a little bit of mental issues before she got dementia, so it made her a little more difficult to deal with. And she went 3 weeks before she'd really even look at her. But anyway, the day that she took the dog breed book, the lady just like turned a new leaf, you know, and she wanted to look at the book and she found a dog like she had when she was growing up, you know. And so it's a matter of just learning the patient and see what interests them. And, you know, if you take something that interests them, you know, then you can open. And after that, it was just like a whole new world for her and that volunteer.
That's amazing.
That's great. Are there other things that the position entails specifically?
No, well, we have sometimes volunteers will work in the office. You know, some people never want to go out see a patient, but they want to volunteer, you know, and so they can volunteer in the office. You know, we sometimes do activities out in facilities. It's kind of like a PR for our company, you know, and I have some volunteers that will go out and help me with the activities. And a lot of times our hospice patients come to the activities if they're still able to.
What kind of activities? The reason I ask is because I think I have a friend that is interested in volunteering and maybe doing something with music. She's a DJ.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I have one man right now that's a classical guitarist.
Aww.
And he's actually a professor at OU, but that's his hobby. And he will go to some of my facilities and play for like an hour, and he'll describe, and most of I didn't realize this, but most classical guitar music is like 150 to 200 years old, but a lot of those songs are still sung today, but you had no idea that the origins are that far back, and he will describe what he's going to play and the history of it, and then he'll play for them. Sometimes we do craft projects. I have volunteers that will go and sing to patients, you know, and you can either do it individually to just our patients, you know, or you can do a group activity at the facility where they'll have, you know, several patients to come out and listen to you, you know, because they're always looking for things to entertain patients.
That might be something fun for the Death Doula Duo to do.
Oh, yeah. That is a good idea.
And our best one that we do is that we do tea parties.
Oh,
and
that's great.
I mean, and we do a full-fledged tea party with lace tablecloths and placemats and china. And I make cupcakes are my hobby. And so I make fancy cupcakes to take, you know.
Now, do you take them to like a nursing home or to someone's home?
Yeah, I have taken them to a home. I have taken them. When I first started, I did it just individually to our patients. And I'd take a volunteer and we'd take hats and we'd all wear hats and sit and drink tea. But now we've progressed and now we have, you know, the host set up and we'll put tables together and have a big long table, you know, with lace tablecloths and have everybody to come. And then we have these little fascinator hats that we match their clothing and give them a hat to wear for the tea party.
Would you let me know when you do that next time? I would love to be there and volunteer for that.
Yes, I'll let you know. I'm doing some in May, so I'll let you know.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's just so meaningful to them because that's what their, you know, youth and young adult years were like. Things were more formal then, you know.
Is there a way for people to request a hospice volunteer if they?
Most of the time, they can tell one of our staff, you know, that they would like to have a volunteer. And a lot of times our staff will recognize needs that they have that a volunteer might can do, especially if they don't have many visitors. A lot of them start, you know, getting antsy and creating issues and stuff. And even sometimes the staff at the facility will go, can you please find a volunteer for this patient, you know?
Now, as the staff, do you mean like nurses?
Nurses. Okay. Yeah, not our staff, but like the facility, you know, staff. Yeah.
People that are spending time around them and are noticing that they have a need.
Need, yeah. Well, you remember that one patient you used to go visit, and she talked so much that she would never, anytime I was went in there, one very first time I went in there, and I was there for an hour and a half, and I could not leave because she liked to talk so much. And they actually requested that we find somebody to come in there and sit with her part of the time so that they could leave her room when they needed to.
And they could take turns listening.
They could take turns listening.
Yeah, you know? She was interesting. Yeah. I've enjoyed all of the time that I've spent volunteering.
I know some non-hospice people that like to talk a lot.
And so, you know, we kind of basically look at the needs that they have, you know, and sometimes we have fewer people do this, but it's a real need is that a lot of times caregivers need breaks to be able to go to the doctor or the grocery store or the pharmacy, and we'll have volunteers to sit with the patient while they run errands. But there's less people that like to do that because it scares some people being there by themselves, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so, but we do have volunteers that, you know, will sit with them for a few hours, not too long, because we can't, like, physically take care of them or anything like that. So all we can, you know, give them something to drink or to eat or something like that, but we're not able to physically take care of them.
Heavy lifting, yeah.
So, yeah, so it's only for a few hours, you know, so they can get out and go to the doctor or whatever they need to do.
So what are the requirements to volunteer?
The first thing is you have to be 18. And the biggest deal is that you have to be able to pass a background check. And that's not our rules. That's the state of Oklahoma and Medicare, you know, rules is that you have to pass a background check, you know. And if there's anything, you know, in your past and it shows up, then they probably will not allow you to volunteer. And then we do fingerprints to ensure that the person's who they say they are. I've never had a problem yet, but since sometimes some people change their name when they've had felons and stuff, fingerprints are the only way that you can truly identify somebody. Oh. So,
well, that makes sense because, I mean, the number one priority is patient safety.
Yeah, so. Exactly. You want to make sure, you want to know that who's going out there to visit that patient is who they say they are, you know? And so then after that, you do first of all, you fill out an application and we do a background check and we do your fingerprints. And then I have them to come in and do their orientation and then I'll take them out to visit a patient.
So how has been being a hospice volunteer? What has it done for you personally?
Oh, my goodness. I think I have so much more self-respect for people. Not that I didn't have before, but for the sanctity of life. You know, as I was sharing with you earlier, I've learned that each person, no matter what state of life they're in, they have value. You know, I can go into a patient's room that they're like drawn up in the fetal position and they're facing the wall because they have to be turned. They can no longer turn themselves. And I can sing Amazing Grace to them and see them mouth the words to Amazing Grace, which you don't think, if looking at them, you wouldn't even think they would knew anything, you know, but yet they could still respond and they still remembered the song, even though they might not ever speak a word to me.
Yeah. Music, that is one of the beauties of music.
Even then,
they remember music.
Exactly. And it's just taught me how valuable life is, you know, that to the very end, you know, they still know what's going on, you know. Right. And it's just seeing the joy that they have when we come. One day we were out doing an activity at this facility and we went out there every month. And this one patient told me, she said, "You don't know how boring our life would be if you didn't come out and do these fun things for us," you know? And so when you have these people just enjoying themselves so much, it just makes you feel so good to know, you know, that you have brought life to these people. One day when my guitarist played, this lady said, I feel like I've been to a $1,000 concert. Because, so you know, sweet. They don't get to experience life. And my husband said, you know, being a facility, I hate to say it exactly like this, but being a facility is almost like being a prison. You know, you can only get out if somebody takes you. You cannot get out on your own, you know. And a lot of these people, if they don't have families that can take them out, they don't ever leave once they go there. And so whatever entertainment and stuff is brought to them is all, you know, that they get. And so I've just really, I've progressed as the years have gone on and you know, fine-tuned the things that I do to be more like when I do my tea parties, you know, we do themes. You know, we did St. Patrick's, we did Easter, we did Valentine, I did a Christmas, you know. And so I've learned to just focus more on all the details of what we do, because the colors, the shapes, you know, the decorations, everything we do, you know, is helping those patients, you know.
That's beautiful. I'm really glad that you've been here, that you've been willing to share your time with us.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, I absolutely love it. You know, I have one volunteer that the first time I took her to a memory care unit, she goes, and we were doing a tea party, and I didn't think the people were that bad considering most memory cares. And she goes, oh, Charlene, she goes, don't ever take me out to a place like that again. And I go, okay. So 3 years went by, and then she told me, she says, Charlene, I saw this thing on Facebook that said, that people go out and polish nails in facilities, nursing facilities. And she goes, can we do that? And I go, of course, but you never wanted to go to a facility. And she goes, oh, I think I could do that. And so now here it is like 2 years later, and she's out there every week with me doing all of the activities that we do.
That's awesome.
You know, and so she grew as a person. So I'm going to say that when you volunteer, that you grow as a person, because you're learning a different part of life. You're learning people. You know, you're learning to read people, you know, and there's one facility that we go to, and as soon as we get there, one of the ladies goes, oh, is Jackie there? Is Jackie here today? Because she always helps me, you know, like when we do our crafts, you know. Yeah. And so they know who we are, you know, they call us by name, you know, and.
One of my first jobs was working in a nursing home. And it's amazing the different conversations you get to have with people.
Well, it's so amazing because you just never, looking at people, you would never know their history. And sometimes you're just so amazed when you find out the history of people. You know, recently I was told this lady was an architect and she designed the first Will Rogers Airport. And she never married. Her work was her career, you know. And now she's an Alzheimer's patient that can no longer speak, you know. And she came to one of our tea parties and she didn't even eat the cupcake, but she drank her tea. She did not forget how to drink her tea. And she sat there and held her tea just like a person drinking a cup of English tea, you know. And she drank 3 cups of tea and just sat there. No one, she didn't speak to anybody during the whole time, you know.
She was living it up. That
she was living it up. And that's why I'm saying that people can live at no matter what state in their life, as long as you provide the stimulation for them.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to share as far as any amazing experiences or anything just that you had that you wanted to say?
Well, it's just, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, death is scary, you know, because it's the unknown, you know. Mm-hmm. But I have been to so many deaths, you know, that I always try to make sure that when somebody's experiencing death for their family, to try to make it as easy and memorable as possible. I do not want them to think of the death as just death, but I always want them to remember that they had a good feeling about it. And so I'll either tell them to talk about their family. Tell me about what was your most favorite memory? And I'll get them to start talking about themselves and the person that's passing away so that they can always have a good memory of it. And I'll tell them, you know, talk to them because they can still hear you. Whatever you want to say to them that you haven't said, if you need me to leave the room, I will. But go ahead and talk to them because this is your last chance to talk. And so, you know, all things get easier the more times you do them, you know. And so even
becomes
though,
less scary.
Yeah, and a lot of people tell me, oh, I don't want to do this because I'm afraid I'll get too attached. Well, maybe you will get too attached, but you know what? At the end of that time, you will remember how much joy you brought to that person and how much joy they brought to you, you know, getting to know them, you know. And so I want to say death in hospice is not as scary as you think it is. Our nurses and everybody are just so wonderful with the patients and learn stories about them. And they share the stories with us, you know, and I share those stories with our volunteers. So that helps us know more about how to, you know, what we can do for those patients. So I'm saying, don't let it scare you. Try it, you know, experience it and be there for somebody.
It's a great reminder that really, even in death and leading up to that, quality of life is so important. And we can provide that for people.
Exactly.
Charlene, how can someone get in contact with you if they want to volunteer?
Okay. Well, I work for Choice Hospice. And you can just go online and look for Choice Hospice Oklahoma City. And our number's there. And you can just call me. And I would be happy to, you know, talk to you about what you need to do to volunteer. You know, I try to find locations for people, you know, as close to where they live at, so they don't have to travel so far with gas and everything anymore. And some people don't mind traveling, but I do try to, you know, find places if possible, like within 5 miles or so of where you live at. You know, I work with you on the time that you want to go and the days that you want to go. I talk to you and get to know you as a person to see, you know, who might benefit from your life and your experiences, and try to match you as well as I can, you know.
Okay.
And so
that's great. Thank you so much for being here, Charlene.
Thank you. It's really,
a really
nice.
Good episode. I think this is going to be a perfect call to action. You know, that's really what my idea for this episode was to get people on board. And because I know you could always use more volunteers,
oh, yes,
right?
Yes, we can always use more volunteers.
And I love just getting to know you as a person and seeing what you bring to this. This is amazing.
Well, thank you.
Hearing about your experience has
been
great.
I used to, at one time, wish I could have been a professional musician. And I said, now nursing homes are my stage. You know, I could have never, if I had gone popular, you know, I would have never achieved and felt the satisfaction that I feel with what I do today. I said, I get paid for having fun every day for being with people, you know.
How do I become a hospice volunteer coordinator?
And so, you know, it's just, it has just been an amazing journey. I would have never wanted to have missed the journey. I said, I use all of my talents, and my talents have been multiplied because the more that I do, the more that I try to do, which I didn't think I could do, but, you know, I learned that I could do, you know, so yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, we'd like to ask one parting question for everyone. And how would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? I guess I just like to be remembered as the person that helped people. You know, that's my goal, is just to bring smiles. And that's what I hope I remembered for, is that how I respected people and how I brought joy to them.
That's awesome. I love that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Charlene.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us as we journey through life's most enigmatic reality. I'm Jennifer O'Neill.
And I'm Sarah Kovash.
And we are
the Death Doula Duo.
The Death Doula Duo is brought to you by the Possibilities Podcast platform.
If you have comments, suggestions, or would like to be on the show, please email us at thedeathdouladuo@gmail.com. Until next time, may all your discussions about death be lively.